Hello and welcome to Fantasy Life Podcast Questions Edition. We got all sorts of things on tap. I'm your host, Ian Harditz. It's a great day to be great. It's a great day to talk ball with two of my favorite people in the world, Fantasy Life's Dwayne McFarland, Chris Allen. We are back, boys. Dwayne, how's it going?
I'm doing good, man. I'm just excited to be hanging out. You know, we were talking, you know, before the show, and Chris just kind of dropped, you know, well, I had to go to NASA and debrief these guys. So I'm not going to answer anything today. I think you just take everything to Chris first. He's obviously the smartest person on the show. So maybe we should just, you know, both tee up questions for Chris.
Chris, we've never seen you and Joshua Dobbs in the same room. Just saying.
I may or may not have seen the Pastronaut like while I was down at NASA Langley like earlier this week to brief some of the folks down there. But no, man, I would much rather do this than sitting in like a conference room for, you know, 6 hours. Although like walking around some of their facilities and seeing like how they actually like build and test some of the stuff that we put up in space is actually like really, really fascinating to me. But no, you know, you guys know I prefer to talk ball and like hang out with y'all. Like I wish we'd be able to kick it this weekend playing poker, but like, we'll get a card game here soon, man, for sure. And folks will probably hear more of our antics, you know, as things develop. But yeah, man, it's good to talk ball.
Chris doesn't get to take $50 away from me until sometime in April, but we are very much looking forward to that. Dwayne, if you feel like coming up to Ohio, man, we would love to take your money as well. But let's get after everyone. We've all obviously had, you know, a bit more straggling free agency news coming through. And also at this point, with the majority of big-time free agents being off the market, we want to take a closer look at some of the landing spots that we could see teams really still try to, you know, prioritize upcoming players in the draft and basically see, again, where are the most fantasy-friendly landing spots still available. But starting off, we had some big news break on a Wednesday as we record this on Thursday afternoon. Question number one, how high is too high to rank new Jets wide receiver Mike Williams in the year 2024? Obviously coming off that torn ACL last season, far from ideal, but given that it happened in, I believe, week three, he is tentatively expected to be good to go, honestly, maybe even by training camp, but at least by week one. So Dwayne, I know you've done some work, you know, looking at, you know, aging elderly wide receivers, which is still kind of ridiculous to call someone that's, you know, 29 or 30 years old. So not trying to say, you know, Mike's completely over the hill, but he will be turning 30 on October 4th here later this year. What are your thoughts on Mike joining the Jets? Because hey, if you just look at this team, if God could ever just turn off injuries for one squad right now, I mean, with Tyron Smith, with Aaron Rodgers, and Mike Williams now in the same squad, it'd be pretty damn cool if he chose to do so for the Jets.
Yeah, I think, you know, from a team fit standpoint, like he definitely does something for them. Like if he can bounce back and be, you know, I don't know, maybe 90% of what we've seen, you know, before. I did do a little bit of research before the show, try to look at you know, our friendly Twitter docs out there and see what they had to say about a guy like Mike Williams at age 30. And the surgery was in late October. So we know, yeah, the injury was in week three, but the surgery date is really key. Like you said, it sounds like he's going to be on track for the beginning of the season. But my guess is he won't be, you know, 80-90% until we get to the middle, you know, of next season. And Edwin Porras pointed out that I think he said like 78% of the ACL tears like this for wide receivers, they never even bounce back to 90%. So 60% of the time it works all the time. Like there's something happening there. You guys can go check out Porras over on Twitter and see exactly what he said. Make sure I'm not misquoting him. But the way I took that is, you know, just don't assume, right, that Mike Williams is going to bounce back to full form. There's some chance that he won't. But the thing with him is, like, he's never been this high-end target earner. I know that gets us into arguments, Ian, because that makes me say he's not a great wide receiver. But then, like, you're watching the tape. You're like, dude, just watch the guy. He is a great wide receiver. And I do agree that he's fun to watch. But if he gives them that field stretching element, it's not like we expect him to come in. He doesn't need a 25% target share as long as Aaron Rodgers is healthy. Like, he just needs an 18-19% target share. I mean, Garrett Wilson's going to be the wide receiver one for that offense. So, really, if there is a wide receiver that could come in from a fantasy perspective and be successful along a target hog like Garrett Wilson, it would need to be the archetype like Mike Williams is. Because if you're coming in and you're like, oh, I need a 25% target share to succeed, well, you're not going to because Garrett Wilson is so good. So, I think ultimately it's a pretty good landing spot for Williams. Like you mentioned, Ian, you got to really thread the needle here as far as turning off the injuries because we've got Aaron Rodgers, who's older. Obviously, like if he goes down, we've seen what happens. Now, look, they've addressed the backup quarterback position a little bit more than what we saw in the past, but still, we don't want to see Aaron Rodgers hurt. But like to answer your question, I would say boom, bust, low-end wide receiver three, you know, with the injury stuff. Now, if he is healthier than we think, he could return as high as like, you know, mid-range, low-end wide receiver two value if he scores, you know, several touchdowns. But if he misses out on the touchdowns, you know, has to battle through the injury earlier in the year, you could really be dealing with more like a wide receiver four that gives you, you know, your spike weeks, but you also have some really disappointing weeks along the way.
I kind of do think that wide receiver four range is probably where he belongs. Early underdog, average draft position data. We have guys like Cortland Sutton, wide receiver 47, Jameson Williams, Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson, DeAndre Hopkins, all guys that, no, you know, we have different situations going on, but I think it is a similar tier that we could put Mike in. So
I put him behind Christian Watson, Tyler Lockett, Brian Thomas Jr., the rookie, mm-hmm. Cortland Sutton. I've got him right ahead of Romeo Doubs,
okay.
Jacoby Myers, Jameson Williams, Curtis Samuel, Josh Downs. So like that's the range that I have him in. I've got him at 48 right now, wide receiver 48. That's probably a tad low, but then like when I look at the guys I have around him, I'm like, well, like I don't see a huge reason to like push him ahead of Tyler Lockett.
Yeah. And like those, a lot of those guys are like a fairly similar archetype of player too. Yep. So it's like, that kind of makes sense.
Right now, again, we're recording this like 24 hours after it happened. So he is on the up and up, but still just the wide receiver 52 in current ADP. That will change. But yeah, to Dwayne's point, I mean, if we can actually get him around that range, I don't hate the thought of going after him, especially like those range of wide receivers. You know, when I've been, again, guys, just drafting right now on the treadmill, making, you know, trying to get healthier and just making it, you know, easier on my mind and not hate myself while I'm just exercising, because let's face it, we all hate exercising. Just need to freaking do it, guys, so don't get fat. Anyway, with Mike Williams, I do think that when you do end up going, you know, hero or superhero RB, like those are sort of wide receivers where it's like, oh, okay, all of a sudden, you know, people are starting to reach on their running backs at the same time where you are able to get. No, like they're priced down this low for a reason, but we can see the upside. And honestly, it hasn't been that long since we did see Mike Williams be a productive wide receiver too. In 2022, he was the wide receiver 21 in PPR points per game. And in 2021, he was the wide receiver 13. So that was always kind of the battle with Big Mike, because obviously former number 7 overall pick. I mean, people have really been, you know, high on this guy for a long time. And from 2018 to 2020, I mean, he couldn't even crack the top 36 wide receivers in fantasy. But as we like to say, Chris, don't hate the player, hate the ADP. And for once, it seems like we're going to get a pretty solid ADP for Big Mike. Again, health does matter, but at a minimum, man, what a great upgrade over Alan Lazard. And it just makes the overall offense better. Being able to now use Garrett Wilson, maybe more of a Z role, get him some extra snaps in the slot. Really, really like this fit specifically for the Jets. And at a minimum, I think we're looking at a quality boomer bust wide receiver four.
Yeah, and I think we have to look at this in two ways. Not just how it affects like Mike Williams, like ADP, but also the direct effect of for a guy like Garrett Wilson. If you do have a player that's able to stretch some defenses deep, does it allow Garrett Wilson to operate more as that type of like primary X receiver, or even like moving into the slot a bit more that we saw out of Garrett Wilson like last season, but now it's just like all the more effective like of a passing offense for Aaron Rodgers to hit him. So, and also like to your point saying like upgrade over Alan Lazard and like Jason Brownlee, like the with the undrafted guy that they had last year, like some of those guys that they were tossing out on the perimeter, you're not going to get anything out of those guys. I think out of all like five of those like receivers, the non-Garrett Wilson receivers, like Lazard, Gibson, Brownlee, Randall Cobb that they were tossing out there, even like Mecole Hardman before he wound up going back and being like the Super Bowl winning Mecole Hardman. But like none of those guys averaged over like 5 PPR points per game. I mean, think about that. So if we're already saying that the way, like how Mike Williams wins, like the types of targets that he can earn, whether it's at 20%+ rate or lesser, if he can win on some of those explosives, still create like, still win in contested catch situations, I mean, he should be able to exceed like the at least the mark of all, like all 5 of those guys, because compare that to the rest of the league or the wide receivers that were at least exceeding that average. I mean, Alec Pierce was averaging more than like 5 PPR points per game. Devontae Parker averaged like more than 5 PPR Whoa. Points per game. So if we can get like more than that, even just a little bit more than that of Mike Williams, like, yeah, like that, at least that gives us some hope for at least the Jets offense as a whole. And then of course that at least gives us a, like a general floor for Mike Williams. And then of course the tangential effect of having a guy like Mike Williams on the team, which helps a Garrett Wilson, helps a Breece Hall, maybe an explosive that gets them into like within the red zone. And then Breece Hall pounds it in for a touchdown. Boom. Like that helps out like how we perceive the rest of the offense. So I think overall having Mike Williams on the team is a good fit for what they should be trying to do anyway. And then if we get those big gains like for Mike Williams, great. But then of course it affects the guys that we're most likely to draft anyway, the Garrett Wilsons, the Breece Halls of the world, and all of that.
ESPN's Mike Clay, always, you know, coming out with some handy dandy projections soon after big moves like this. He has Williams projected this year for 98 targets, 65 receptions, 889 yards, and 6 touchdowns. So quality stat line there again for a wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5 target. And as Dwayne was saying, we don't need a 25% target share, especially with hopefully a healthy version of Aaron Rodgers under center. Pretty nice career run for Mike Williams. My God, goes from Deshaun Watson at Clemson to Phillip Rivers to Justin Herbert to Aaron Rodgers. Talk about an anti-Terry McLaurin or DJ Moore we got going on here. So good for Mike, good for the Jets. Maybe, just maybe, Gangrene's going to be rising up and doing some big things here in 2024. Question number two, guys, had some big news drop all over the quarterback scene for the Pittsburgh Steelers over the last few weeks. And at the end of the day, who will be the Steelers starting QB by November? Dwayne, that is the key here, giving Russell Wilson a 2-month stretch because apparently there's no competition. I don't quite understand why a guy you're paying a veteran minimum who is on the team for a whopping 6 days before Justin Fields is all of a sudden above a competition, particularly when we compare the two over the past two seasons in particular and the passing numbers. Yes, do side with Russ, but yeah, remember quarterbacks do run the ball too. Obviously, Fields takes that cake. Gun to my head, yeah, I do think that Russell Wilson is probably the better, like, just at this point in time, who do you want to run Arthur Smith's, you know, dumbass offense a little bit better? Probably Russell Wilson is going to be a little bit better from that point of view, but who gives you the overall higher upside? I think that's Justin Fields. So, Dwayne, that is the issue here, because with someone like Arthur Smith and Mike Tomlin, we can show the highlights for Justin Fields and, you know, the bigger, you know, arm strength, at least at this point in his career, I think. We still got the moonball going on with Russ, but which quarterback is going to actually go out there on the field and do what Arthur Smith is drawing up in the huddle? I think that's probably Russell Wilson. But is he even good enough to hold on to that job very long? So thoughts on this QB competition, Dwayne? And, you know, maybe not the best quarterback competition we've ever seen, but certainly a hell of a lot better than Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, I think it's Justin Fields. I mean, the problem for Russ is like all the things that he does well, like either they've deteriorated, like his rushing ability, so he doesn't add as much as he used to, or the thing he still has, which is the moon ball down the field. Well, now you have so much deep coverage. You've got all these two safety looks. You know, even if teams are playing one deep, like they play so much deeper, it's gone. Like the thing that made him so good, which was, hey, we're going to run the ball, which Arthur Smith's going to want to do, and we're going to get you to come in and you're going to single up. And back in the day when it's when the league was predominantly cover three, then he would just see, okay, I've got the single coverage. I'm going to throw it, you know, over the scoreboard and it's going to land perfectly, like, you know, rainbow pot of gold on the other side. And the leprechaun in this case is Tyler Lockett, you know, running for a touchdown. So like Russ was one of the best ever, like at that kind of pass. But the way the league plays defense now, it's not there. And he's not a good intermediate passer. He's not a great underneath passer. He's fine if he knows it's got a design play like a screen or whatever. But if he's got to step back and read it and throw a slant, like that's not his game. He's just not good at those kind of passes. So I still think Justin Fields gives you the best chance to like have a more diverse offense because of what you mentioned, Ian, his ability in the run game. Defenses have to respect that. And then I do think that he can actually still layer more areas of the field. Like he's got accuracy issues, you know, he's got some issues maybe with reading the defenses, but I think he's actually a pretty good fit with Arthur Smith because he likes to run so much play action. He likes to get the ball to the backs as well. You know, he dials up a lot of types of throws, like where I could see, you know, Fields being, you know, good. But I think the main thing is just Fields is so good on the ground. Like if you ask opposing defensive coordinators, who would they rather prepare for? I promise you it's Russell Wilson. They would rather prepare for Russell Wilson. They would much less prepare for Justin Fields because of all the extra attention you've got to pay to him on the ground. And then in the scramble game as well, you've got to spy, you got to do all sorts of weird stuff with your defense. You can't always just pin back your ears and rush the passer. With Russ, like you can pretty much play your basic game plan and you're going to be able to be successful at, you know, against him. So yeah, I think it's going to be Justin Fields and I don't think it'll take midway through the season. I think it'll happen pretty quick. I happened to watch a lot of Russell Wilson last year and it was terrible. I mean, it was absolutely terrible. Like he was only making one read and just trying to run and he can't really run anymore. So I don't have much faith at all in Russ.
Russ might be, I mean, arguable, probable future Hall of Famer. Like we're talking specifically 2024 here. So, you know, not trying to slander the man. He's done a lot of great things.
The league changes hurt anyone more than Russ, the way defenses play now. I think you could argue that there's nobody it's impacted more than him.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like he's doing a great job limiting these turnovers and negative plays, because that's where the issue comes with Justin Fields. And honestly, they're both really bad at it. Okay. Yeah. Like, these are the only two quarterbacks with 100 or more interceptions and sacks over the past two seasons. Pressure, you know, sack rate under pressure is one that, you know, good, just trendy new stats we're talking about a lot. Over the past two seasons, the bottom six quarterbacks in it: Tannehill, Bryce Young, Russ, Sam Howell, Zach Wilson, and Justin Fields. And again, you go through the passing stuff, Russ has been quite a bit better in completion percentage over expected, but like EPA per dropback, Fields is 31st, Russ is 29th. I mean, Chris, again, more matters than just these numbers. I don't think Russ, and I'm going 2022-23, so Russ did improve quite a bit more, you know, once he was away from the Nathaniel Hackett experience and everything. But it does seem like sooner rather than later, Justin Fields should be the guy here.
Yeah, I'm thinking not even regular season. I'm thinking people will be clamoring for Justin Fields to be the starter during the preseason.
Let's go.
I mean, think about it. And I get why that the Steelers, like PR and Tomlin, all of them came out just almost immediately afterwards saying that Russ was going to be the starter. I think they don't want to deal with it. Yeah, I think that's why, because they don't want to have to go. I mean, think about all the stuff.
This is just going to make them have to deal with it more. Now people are
they're kicking the can down the road like 5 months, because it's going to take one preseason, not even a game. It'll take one preseason snap of Justin Fields out there. They'll see Russ come out, do his thing, maybe complete a moon ball, maybe not. But then the moment Fields gets out there, doesn't matter if he completes a pass or not, but when he tucks that ball and we all see that 4.4 speed that he has, everyone's going to look at them and be like, ooh, that boy, nice. Like, I want him. I don't care. Like, because completing a deep pass, or just being able to be a thrower of the ball, that's a prerequisite for having the position. They want explosives. The people want to be able to see, like, do we have a shot of being able to keep up with the Joe Burrows, or Lamar Jacksons, and the Deshaun Watsons within the division? If they don't have a shot at that, what are we even doing? So who's going to give them that best shot? And the most, like, in the second people see that during the preseason, I mean, it's over after that. Every week it's going to be, well, is it Justin Fields or Russell Wilson? Or what is Russ doing to keep Justin Fields at bay? Like, what more are you going to be doing for this offense? I mean, the questions are going to be relentless. And with how much of there's this incongruency between how Justin Fields are, like, how Russell Wilson play stylistically to what Arthur Smith wants to do, the middle of the field stuff, like having multi-field, like, multi-level reads that Russell Wilson just isn't capable of doing at this point in the season. Not to say that Fields is leagues or, like, you know, so much better I'm at it, but at least he's more efficient in those areas. Throwing across the middle of the field, like Fields is, like, just this past season, Fields was twice as efficient as Russ was, like, on an EPA per dropback basis. I mean, these are just and also when you factor in the mobility portion, it's just going to be a night and day experience for folks that are going to be watching the Steelers. So I think, like, by November, Tomlin's going to be tired of hearing the questions. I think it's more about, like, are they going to be at a point where they're, I don't know, 1-3 or something like that to open the season over the first month, and it's just, all right, well, we got to do something. We have to switch things up or whatever. It might just be the when Baker Mayfield, like, kind of came in, like, there might be just like at halftime when Baker was still in Cleveland, like, at halftime they make the switch, Justin Fields comes out, he winds up winning the game, and then it's over after that. That's what I see happening.
Electric moment in Cleveland. They broke out all the Bud Lights. Remember that? They had
hilarious
cases at every bar. It was like stock bridges for the Browns to break the streak. Fun times there. And also, Chris, 10 points, incongruency. Go spend a week at NASA and you start shouting out those kind of words at us. My man.
I had to switch from azimuth to incongruency. Like, yeah, I had to make the switch.
Getting smarter out here. Great day to be great. But yeah, man. And again, some of these passing numbers, it's one of the most infuriating things I see on, you know, the First Take and whatever shows you want to watch, and just the social media graphics. Like, yeah, I understand Russ, you know, point for point, passing metric for passing metric is going to be a little bit better than Fields. But yeah, guys, when we have the guy that's averaging literally the second most rushing yards per game of any quarterback other than Lamar Jackson ever, I think that kind of matters in the discussion as well. So fingers crossed, OHIO, Justin Fields, go win that job.
Woo!
Question number three, fellas, which, if any, Raiders running back are you most excited to draft? We did see Alexander Mattison take his talents to the Raiders. It was, you know, a little peculiar to me that I don't think we've still even gotten the contract details. So one of those things where I'm not exactly sure how much money he's making, veteran men, what it could be, because yeah, he was pretty horrendous last year. I mean, my man's even going back to his days at Boise, like he is awesome at jumping over other humans. I love a good hurdle. Like that's a fun time. And even during the Dalvin Cook years, like this was one of the better handcuffs in fantasy football. But even then, a lot of it was volume driven. And then when we saw him really get the chance last season to stand up and do something, did not work out. I really could not find a stat other than missed tackles first force per carry that says he's anything other than a bottom, you know, 10 to 15 running back in the league. 180 rush attempts without a touchdown last season. That was easily the most in the NFL. Hilariously, I got to find the exact numbers on this one. His red zone rushing should be studied for like how horrendous it was. All right, here we go. 9 carries inside the 5-yard line for -7 yards and, of course, 0 touchdowns. Like, that is the question that we see go viral on Twitter like every now and again, where it's like, you know, could you gain 1 yard in an NFL game if you got the chance to do it? No, you would get killed. Alexander Mattison couldn't even do it inside the 5-yard line last year. So, Dwayne, you know, it's one of those things where, and I always appreciate this happens, like you get a guy signing on a new team and half of the, you know, public seems to be saying, oh my gosh, Zamir White's now going to have to split carries. This sucks. And the other half goes, oh, this is great news for Zamir White. You know, Alexander Mattison's the competition. We're in business. I tend to lean a little bit closer to the latter, but the problem is, and it goes back to, you know, what the Raiders were even saying at the scouting combine, they do want to keep multiple backs involved in the committee. They still have Amir Abdullah there. I would be surprised if they don't add another guy in the draft. I don't think we're going to be getting the 20, 25 touches or positive game script from Zamir White that we saw down the stretch of last season. Thoughts on this Raiders backfield, Dwayne?
Yeah, I mean, if I had to pick one, I'm going to take Zamir White. I moved him up a little bit in my updated top 150. He was running back 42. I moved him to running back 36. And I got the Alexander Mattison news, like, you know, before I actually put the ranks out. So I'd already accounted for it. So yeah, if I had to pick, I'm going with Zamir White, but it wasn't like he was great either. 8% of his carries went for 10 plus yards. That's not really good. That's well below the league average. He was good yards after contact, 3.2. That's versus 2.8 for Alexander Mattison. But I kind of see them as pretty similar. Like, I'm not that excited really about either back. So I think it's just one that we'll have to keep an eye on. Again, I would put Zamir White as the favorite to win the job based on how bad Alexander Mattison was last year. But in years prior to that, Alexander Mattison wasn't that bad. You know, he was just kind of you know, but last year, obviously, you know, that's what people are going to remember is how bad it was last year. But it wouldn't surprise me at all, Ian, if we really see more of a split backfield between these two. So Zamir White is a guy I'm happy to draft right now as like that low end running back 3. But if his price keeps going up, then I'm probably going to be out on him.
I want nothing to do with him if he is going to end up around that RB24 line. I'm with you. Outside the top 30, okay, that's fine because he's pretty much next to guys that aren't going to be the RB1s on their offenses. But I guess my concern is, like, when you look at that stretch run, final 4 games of the Raiders last season, they had the 63-21 win over the Chargers on Thursday night. That was hilarious. They inexplicably beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead. You know, they were actually up multiple scores for most of that game. They go to the Colts and play a pretty close game, and they beat the Broncos by 13. I mean, this team was grooving down the stretch of last season. Fantastic defense. Aiden O'Connell was existing. And that's where my problem comes in, guys, because right now it's apparently going to be between Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. Please, for the love of God, we need Michael Penix or Bo Nix to add to this squad. And even then, I'm not going to be exactly, you know, shouting to the rooftops that this is going to be anything better than probably a below average offense. So, Chris, where do you kind of settle with that? Because I went on the 4 for 4 podcast this week and, you know, talking to John, and it was a great conversation. You guys should check it out. But, you know, I was asked, you know, for some of the lessons I guess I had learned from last fantasy season. And one of mine was looking at kind of the bottom 6 scoring offenses from last year. And the Jets were in there. Injuries are going to happen, you know, with Rodgers. Obviously, that was unfortunate. We couldn't have seen that coming. But other than the Jets, I mean, we're talking about the Commanders at 25th, the Falcons, the Titans, the Steelers, the Jets, the Giants, the Patriots, and the Panthers. I think we were pretty confident those offenses were going to suck before the season, and lo and behold, they did suck. And accordingly, they're really, like, out of all those teams, I'm not, you know, Bijan Robinson had some good weeks, obviously, but you still weren't thrilled about where you drafted him. Similar sentiment with guys on Washington and guys on Tennessee. Like, when I look at this Raiders offense, Chris, I think they're going to suck. So why are we even all that worried about, you know, Zamir White or whoever's going to be there? Should probably be avoiding the whole situation, just period. I don't know. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but I'd say the only this to play devil's advocate, I would say the only other situation that I would think of, like, where we thought the team was going to be bad, like, coming into the season, and then the team was relatively good. Houston. I mean, while actually, like largely exceeded expectations in the running back round of benefiting from it, was the Bucs. Because, like, remember, it was like Baker Mayfield and Kyle Trask in, like, the middle of August, and then, of course, they wind up, like, getting into the playoffs, and then you have Rashad White, who has this, I mean, monstrous workload, like, not just from a, like, total carry standpoint, because he's getting all the inside the five touches, like, also working in the passing game. Not going to say that's going to be Zamir White. But if we want to think, if we want to try and push past this idea that, like, we're just not good at projecting, like, which offenses are going to be good or bad. Like, sometimes we can get a good idea, like, you know, make some assumptions, but we're not always going to know. So maybe Gardner Minshew could string together a few, like, winning games, which he did, like, last season. Maybe Aiden O'Connell could string together a few winning games, which he did last year. And maybe the Raiders offense, like, winds up being at least good enough that whomever is toting the rock for them, like, gets inside the 10, gets some of those money touches. Then a guy like Zamir White, like, could be the beneficiary of that type of workload. But it's funny that you mentioned the Commanders a couple of times, because that's almost how I see, like, this backfield kind of working out between Zamir White and Alexander Mattison being the new Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson, like-ish. You've got the guy that can play the early down work, can be a guy that can get out there and run some routes for you, because over the, was it that 4 or 5 game stretch, Zamir White, he did have like a 16-17% like targets per route run rate. So that'd be fairly healthy for a guy like his size and what we think that he can be as a pass catcher. Wasn't that bad. So it's just, if he can do that, like, can he be like the, like that Brian Robinson, like, archetype of running back, and how useful that could be for fantasy. And then now put Alexander Mattison in the Antonio Gibson 2-minute third down potential, has some passing role, like, somewhere in that offense where he could be effective in that limited role, and just annoying enough that unless there's an injury, or if he winds up starting off slow, he doesn't vibe with Antonio Pierce for whatever reason. And that's where a guy like Zamir White could really start to take off if he gets all those touches. But, like, all those things have to hit. Yeah. In order for us to really realize that value. So I'm with both you guys where it's like, if he's still in that RB30 range, cool. I'm on board. Doesn't matter if the Raiders are great or not. But if his price does get steamed up and we are really, like, start to scrutinize, like, whether or not this Raiders passing game is going to be good with whomever is going to be under center, then it's like, nah, I'm good on that. Like, I'd rather just, like, look elsewhere than try and bet on Zamir White getting all those touches, the Raiders offense being good, and then, of course, all of that being good for Zamir White in fantasy.
Look, there are only so many players at any position around the league that, you know, just have a green check mark next to their volume, their personal talent, and their offensive environment. So I understand it can't be perfect at every single round and level of the drafts we're doing, but I don't know. Dwayne kind of spelled it out. Like, Zamir White wasn't that incredible last year. Like, we can do the whole Zach Evans, he used to be a 5-star recruit thing again, but, you know, he was a day 3 draft pick. We have a volume potential issue again with the Raiders talking about one use committees. As Chris says, this does profile as at least a 2-back committee. Could even be 3 if we see, again, another person added. Then the offensive environment, probably not going to be great. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, overall, not too high on Zamir White going into 2024. But hey, my man's is jacked. You guys see those Twitter videos? My goodness. Great.
They don't call him Zeus for nothing.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. All right, guys. Question number 4. Probably could have slid this one after the Steelers quarterbacks. I will watch the film and get better. Why isn't George Pickens getting the same offseason hype as Drake London? Who do I think is better? I do think Drake London, but I asked my Twitter followers, and, you know, sometimes I'm able to get a pretty decent return on this, and it was like 75% to 25% London versus Pickens, and it is one of those things where if you go ahead and go through their numbers in the first 2 seasons, blind player A versus player B, we would all say George Pickens was the more productive, and I don't know, I guess you could say better receiver. Yes, we've all seen the offense that London had to be in. I understand Arthur Smith now being George Pickens' play caller isn't ideal, but let's face it. It's not like Pickens has exactly had, you know, world-class quarterback play going on in Pittsburgh as well. Dwayne, I know Drake London, one of your biggest risers, and I love it. You know, I think he said wide receiver 14. He was like wide receiver 27. Kirk Cousins, for sure, over Russ and Justin Fields. But as I'm looking at this, Pickens, still outside the top 30 wide receivers, even though Deontay Johnson is gone, even though he's got Russell Wilson now, who has been able to enable at least Cortland Sutton to some, you know, high-end fantasy relevance last year. Justin Fields, free DJ Moore. How many freaking quarterbacks did we see not be able to do that over the past half decade or so? Are you a little confused, Dwayne, why George Pickens isn't getting a higher bump, or am I just once again falling into my trap of just loving contested catch artists?
No, I mean, look, I ranked him as wide receiver 32. And I thought I was going to move him up higher. And the main reason being, we've seen him without Deontay Johnson, and we've seen his role expand in those cases. Now we have a new offensive coordinator, but he's gone from being just a go ball specialist to being someone that they really, you know, applied in a lot of different ways. And he came through. He had a 26% target share on plays without Deontay Johnson on the field last year. So that's really nice, you know, for George Pickens. So to your point, I don't just view him as a deep ball contested guy. I think you can use him in a lot more ways. But and knowing that, I really thought I was going to move him higher, but it really comes back to the conversation that we already had, which comes back to Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. And I have to really squint to see anything more than a 225 yards per game passing attack, max. And I still have to deal with freaking Arthur Smith, who will rotate this dude off the field. I mean, Arthur Smith took Drake London off the field. He took Kyle Pitts off the field. He took Bijan Robinson. These are guys when he was a head coach and he was invested in them as first round picks, and he took them off the field. He has no such allegiance to George Pickens. Like, so I think there's just enough concerns. I think the talent profile is there. Like, I think the way I end up being wrong on this, and it hurts me in fantasy season, is really one of those quarterbacks have to surprise us. And honestly, I'm just not that worried about it. If I look at Kirk Cousins, you know, you're looking at an offense, you know, for the Falcons going from, you know, I think it was like 175 yards per game, and then it was up to like 220, to now it's probably going to be between 260 and 280. Like, that's a huge jump. And it's not just that. We know the touchdown passes. We know Kirk can come out and throw 30 touchdown passes in a season. Like, we're hoping that Justin Fields or Russell Wilson can throw 22. Like, that would be that would be good. It could be more like 19 or 18. So there's just a lot that really hurts Pickens there. I do like the player. I think you could make an argument. You know, I'm looking at the ranks and where I had him right now, and I remember trying to think through this, but like, I can't get him ahead of T. Higgins. I can't get him ahead of DK Metcalf, who I've got in the low end wide receiver, you know, two, high end wide receiver three conversation. I don't think I can get him past Amari. I can't probably get him. I could, depending on where Adunze lands. I've got Adunze two spots ahead of Pickens. That could be wrong. I've got Jaden Reed one spot ahead. So I think you could argue easily, hey, Dwayne, you should at least have him at 30, right behind Amari Cooper. But I think once you get to Amari, like the other names that I've got ahead, like I'm not bumping him over Jaylen Waller, Cooper Kupp, Keenan Allen, Malik Nabers, like not happening. So I feel pretty good about the range I'm in, but it did feel kind of weird when I'm like, oh, wide receiver 32. Like when I looked at the number, I was like, I felt like it was probably going to be closer to wide receiver 24. But then when I looked at all the names and where I had him, it's just one of those things where it's like, sorry, man, I can't get you past them with your quarterback issues.
Yeah.
It's not ideal, but Chris, we did see one of the last games he played, buck 95 and two tuds against your Bengals. Now, I've learned, because you try to say anything about George Pickens on Twitter and you just get, hey, show his blocking highlights, because apparently Pickens is the only wide receiver in the league to ever have one bad blocking rep. So I just, man, this guy is a lot more than just someone that I think can only go downfield and win at the catch point, which is awesome. Don't get me wrong, but I went ahead and combed some of the next gen stats, fastest ball carriers, you know, yesterday. Last season, the fastest wide receivers clocked. Number one, DK Metcalf. Number two, Tyreek Hill. And tied for third, Ja'Marr Chase and George Pickens. So, Chris, I agree with Dwayne in that it's hard to move him that much higher. I'm going to have my ranks done here in just hopefully a week. And then I don't see a way I'm going to be able to squeeze him in my top 24. At a minimum, though, when I look at him, you know, the guys Dwayne named ahead of him, I think that's fine. But the guys behind him, Christian Kirk, Terry McLaurin, Calvin Ridley, Jordan Addison, like, I want to draft Pickens at this range, I think, even if we can't get all that excited about bumping him up. Is that fair, Chris?
I think that's fair. And I do wonder, like, just from nothing against like either of your ranks or like how people like put them together. Uh-oh. But I do wonder if like the fantasy community at large, how we value wide receivers and just like the amount of knowledge that's out there about like the archetypes of wide receivers that are out there and who we think, not what we know, but who we think can score, or like which style is more conducive to scoring fantasy points. Because, I mean, you guys laid it out. I mean, George Pickens, a contested catch, perimeter ball, Mike Williams type merchant. Like that is what he is. Drake London. Wasn't Cooper Kupp a comp for Drake London, like when he was first coming out? So if you think about those guys.
Can't quite figure out
why. Yeah. But it's like when you think about those guys. And now who's been more like which guy, like even those specific names or what types of wide receivers have been more conducive to scoring fantasy? Who would you want on your team? Do you want Cooper Kupp on your team at his cost, or do you want Mike Williams on your team at his cost? And most people would prefer Cooper Kupp. So it's those guys that are the types of routes that they run. Again, going back to the knowledge that's out there right now. Think about the work that Matt Harmon has done at Reception Perception, like kind of charting, like, all right, Drake London runs more digs, curls, slants. I mean, the things that are more timing routes over the middle of the field, capable of creating more yards after the catch, versus George Pickens, posts, corners, the volatile catches, the ones that, all right, if he comes down with it, cool, it's going to be the highlight reel.
He did a lot more of that when Deontay Johnson wasn't in the lineup. Like, he was running all the routes.
Yeah, 2022.
So that's the question.
Can he do it for
the entire
season?
Him on all the ways? Yeah. You know, now that Deontay's gone, or and we don't know because the coordinator changed.
And that's why here sitting at like the end of March, like without knowing any better, it's just all we've got is like that small segment of games and then everything else. And so again, if we were to look at it and say, well, I want the Drake London style of player. That's what I want on my team versus the Pickens guy who for the majority of his career has been that guy that he runs 9 routes. He's smoking perimeter corners. And then the volume perspective comes in. Arthur Smith, like for the last like 4 seasons, their drop back over expectation rate, their average is like minus 10% for all of the stuff with the Rams, which we can assume is going to be at least, philosophically what they're going to try and implement in Atlanta. It's been like plus 3%. So if the volume is going to be more for Drake London, the types of routes that at least we think are going to be more conducive are going to be there for London, then everybody's just going to want to go with London.
I think the question though from Ian is right. Like, should it, and you didn't say it necessarily this way, Ian, but I mean, right now I've got George Pickens at 32, Drake London at 14. That's a huge gap. Yeah. I mean, and I think if you wanted to be devil's advocate for George Pickens, what you could say is, well, if they do let him run the full route tree, and if what we saw in his limited sample of running the full route tree last year was actually indicative of what he can do, which he was good at it, mm-hmm. Well, then why couldn't he be DJ Moore? You know, DJ Moore had to deal with all that same crap that we're crapping on Drake London about, basically, which is, hey, they're not going to throw the ball a lot. We don't like their quarterback. They can't mm-hmm. throw for a lot of yards. But if he came out, like, I think his out would be, like, he does run all the routes, and he had, like, a 32-33% target share. Then even if his quarterback's really sucks, then I think you feel good about it. My challenge, though, is will Arthur Smith let the dude even play enough to be able to get that kind of target share? He just does stupid crap. Like, Arthur Smith will have the 5th wide receiver out there running 20% of the routes.
Yeah, because even with all that, so let's say he does run all the routes. He does get, let's say he has, I don't know, like an 1,100-yard season, but it's like 2 touchdowns because either Fields and like the combination of Wilson only throw like less than 30, and then whatever other touchdowns that are accrued, they either go to Najee Harris or either one
if they
of the
get
quarterbacks
to 30
running
I'll in. Send both of you guys $100 each. They're not yeah.
that's what I'm saying. It's like,
I know that's free money for you guys, so write it down, Ian. Yeah. Man,
but the touchdown equity is going to be so small in the, like, when we go to look at all the total fantasy points, it's just going to be George Pickens in that, that glut of like low end wide receiver 2, high end wide receiver 3s, because the touchdowns aren't going to be there. Like, massive yardage, but no touchdowns.
And if we do want to just make the argument that Kirk Cousins is that much better than Russ and Fields, I get it. And you got the volume, but I guess the difference between them based on, you just have to go back to draft capital, I guess. Cause I mean, again, London's got, the edge in yards per route run, I guess, over these past 2 years, but total production, again, in bad offenses, hasn't gone exactly great for Drake London. And after going back and watching like every single catch he made last season, I think some of those, like, you're not seeing him out there getting 10 yards of separation, you know, on comebacks and stuff. It's kind of a similar archetype out there. And accordingly, mm-hmm. when we look at it over these past two seasons, like, their PPR points per game are within 0.3 of each other. So you really, really got to be confident that, again, Kirk and just Drake London himself are that much better to overly warrant it. Man, it was a lot sweeter, Dwayne, when I told you I was getting all this Drake London like in the mid wide receiver 20s a couple of weeks ago. Now it's a bit tougher to drive up that price tag.
But yeah, I think the market's testing the top limits of where Drake London can go now. And I expect it, mm-hmm. honestly, to bump up, and then it's going to fall back down.
Yeah.
Like when people right. call him. Now, it's not going to fall anywhere near what it was, but it wouldn't surprise me at all. Like, once we get all the rookie landing spots and everything else, and people kind of have a chance to let things settle, that you're getting Drake London more like wide receiver 18. Instead of right now on Underdog, he's wide receiver 14.
Mm-hmm. There's going to be madness in the ranks because the amount of, like, obviously we got, again, Aduze, Marvin, Neighbors, you know, yeah. going probably top 10.
A lot of guys that are going to go in the first round.
Oh, my yeah. gosh. And then even, like, day two, like, there's going to be maybe, like, 10 wide receivers go off the board, you know, in round two and the early parts of round three. Can't wait. Going to be fun. But, fellas, before we get to question number five, want to give a shout-out to some of our lovely sponsors because tournament time is officially here. I made my bracket this morning. I know nothing about college basketball, but go Tennessee Volunteers, trying to get that perfect bracket down. So why don't you go ahead and fill out your brackets, place your bets on who you think will rise to the top with my partners at DraftKings Sportsbook. Right now, all new customers who bet $5 will get $150 in bonus bets. Five for $150? You guys have heard these promos before. That's a pretty damn good one. Instantly download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use our code QUESTIONS. The crown is yours. Remember, guys, $5 bet on anything and you will receive $150 in bonus bets instantly. Stay in on the action and use your $150 in bonus bets on DraftKings same game parlays for a shot at an even bigger payout. Combine multiple bets together from the same game, including total points scored, number of rebounds by your favorite player, and so much more. Don't worry if sports betting is not yet available in your state, because you can still join in on all the fun with DraftKings Daily Fantasy and have a shot to win cash prizes. So, in conclusion, download DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Again, use that promo code QUESTIONS and bet just $5 on any wager, and you'll get $150 back in bonus bets instantly. That's promo code QUESTIONS only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Used to think my headphones were too big on me, but I realized I just freaking jump around like a crazy person during these podcasts, and that's why they're falling off my head. So I will work on that. But also, guys, y'all give a shout out to our friends over at Control, because eating junk food, let's face it, it's kind of like drafting a kicker for your fantasy team. I don't recommend it, and you'll feel terrible afterwards. Instead of eating food that makes you feel bad inside and out, try Control. Control is healthier food that actually tastes good, and they sent me some pretty cool stuff. This is my favorite water bottle, but in addition to that, guys, the protein shakes, the cookies, like, they just have so many different possibilities, and it legitimately tastes good. Like, these protein shakes, I almost like just want to drink them like to wake up every day, not even when I'm working out, because they include like little bits of cereal in there. So it's freaking awesome. It's like a milkshake, but it's allegedly good for you. I mean, it is good for you. It's not even allegedly, it's a fact. It is good for you, and I enjoy it. So again, guys, Control, it's the healthier food that actually tastes good. They offer the best tasting shakes, bars, and cookies in the game of all sorts of amazing flavors. I've really been digging, again, those protein shakes, chocolate in particular, but if you're a vanilla guy, nothing wrong with that. Go ahead and enjoy that too, because all the flavor options are worthy of the 101 pick. And fortunately for you, with Control's Bundle Builder, you don't even have to choose just one flavor. As you bundle up and add more products, you will unlock a bigger discount up to 20% off. And we've even provided you an extra 10% off using code LIFE that stacks on top of that bundle discount. So shout out to Control. You know, you guys got some extra protein bags, you want to keep sending them to your boy. I will not hate that as well. All right, guys, as is typical on these shows, we got a little bit carried away and went kind of longer, so we're going to go a little bit quicker through these other questions. But these come down to, and I kind of had an article go up on Fantasy Life, again, talking about the teams that really didn't replace some of their more glaring roster holes. Specifically, again, we are talking fantasy here, at running back, wide receiver, and tight end, and accordingly, what they might do in the draft or potentially with some of the free agents to do just that. So takes us to question number five. The Cowboys happen to still have a massive hole at running back. Who would you like to see fill it? Dwayne, we were discussing a little bit before this show, you know, just wondering if there's any big news we need to add. And honestly, like, over the last, you know, 24 hours or so, other than Mike Williams, it's just been Deontay Foreman going to the Cleveland Browns. So you mentioned Foreman would have been a pretty good fit in Dallas. I agree. Sadly, he's gone. So who would you like to see the Cowboys go ahead and fill this need with, Dwayne?
Yeah, for the low-key guys, Foreman would have been my first, but it's pretty bad. So I think what we know right now, there's no way it's just going to be one back this year in Dallas. They're going to have to draft somebody, and they're going to have to pick one of these guys up most likely. And any of these guys, I don't know, like, do they beat out a Rico Dowdle? I don't know for sure, but J.K. Dobbins, you know, would be a guy, Ian, that we've always liked, obviously coming off of another injury. So like, that's super risky. Yeah. I mean, honestly, is it Zeke? Like, I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been so terrible. I think I would probably take Zeke over him, because at least, you know, Zeke's got the power. You know, they're both slow, but Clyde also is not powerful. Rashad Penny. Like, I mean, I know it didn't work last year for the Eagles, but I'm not so sure that if you didn't give Rashad Penny 200 carries last year, if he wouldn't have been a good running back on the Eagles. So, man, it's pretty bad. Like, I don't want to mess with Dalvin Cook. Damian Harris would be the one other one. You know, he had the injury last year and then completely disappeared. Cordarrelle Patterson. How old's Cordarrelle now?
Yeah, baby. Who cares? He's aging.
Yeah.
Like, here's the deal. There's not any certain one that I would just say, oh my God, I'm dying for it. But they're going to have to sign one of these guys. They're going to have to sign one of these guys. Then they're going to have Dowdle, and they're going to have to draft someone. So it's going to be, and it could be a complete rotation all year. So I'm struggling to say that here's the one name. This is the guy they should go get. Like, they're all, they all have major question marks.
I will say this, as much as, you know, with Zeke, we love to say, oh, he's for sure washed. Next gen stats, top speed. Zeke posted a bigger one than both Josh Jacobs and Austin Eckler last season. So I think it was on this hilarious, like, 70-yard touchdown that got nullified. So no one actually ended up seeing it, unless, of course, you subscribe to the Sheesh Report. So keep on doing that. But yeah, Chris, honestly, like, it's not the worst idea in the world. Now, would Zeke be willing to come back there and take, you know, a veteran minimum deal and deal with all that? I'm not sure. But maybe thoughts on some of the prospects, Chris. I know the one that does seem to be a common potential landing spot is Texas RB. Jonathan Brooks. He did suffer a November torn ACL, so we will see, you know, how ready he potentially is by week one. That said, it was actually the Cowboys head team physician that performed the surgery, so if any team is, you know, going to be more aware about actually how healthy Brooks is, would seemingly be the Cowboys.
Yeah, and I think as we were talking, like, during the show, it makes the most sense that if you wanted to take a bet on a guy like Jonathan Brooks being ready at some point during the season, you would want one of the, I would say, just like older running backs that, you know, can get you through what, like 8, 9, 10 games at most, and provide at least for you that early down success. Maybe punch things in if you want have a short yards like type situation. So like the archetype of backs, I think, and to Dwayne's point when we were talking before the show, like, Dante Foreman would have fit perfectly into that role. But if you wanted to at least throw a bit of money at a guy like Rashad Penny, because I know they've got, what, Shoddy's there, right? It's Brian Schottenheimer there. Like, so there is some connection with Penny's time in Seattle, Schottenheimer's time in Seattle. Maybe there's at least a connection there that could be made. But even if you wanted to throw something at Damien Harris, I like. I mean, Latavius Murray's kind of old, but I mean, if you wanted to like throw some money there, but it's like, it's those types of guys that if you just put them in some sort of rotation, made sure that at least the early down success rate is there, so you're not putting Dak into those long down and distance situations where his tendency to try and fit things into tight windows could get him into some trouble. That's at least the plan, or that's the problem that you want to try and solve, is make sure that you're getting the offense into obvious passing situations that are at least easier to convert, higher chance of being able to convert, and then move the sticks, convert the series, things of that nature. So I wouldn't mind any of those guys that were listed. Nobody else really sticks out, like the Joshua Kellys and Kelly's LaRue, Craig Reynolds. Like nobody really sticks out. I would bet money on like Zeke probably being like the likeliest, just because of the familiarity and all that. But it just comes down to the finances at that point, like what he's willing to take from a contractual standpoint in order to make his way back to Dallas.
Only other potential veteran I'll add is maybe Kareem Hunt. He looked washed last year. I get it, but it came out that he was playing through like a hernia the entire season, which, yeah, would, you know, seemingly make you look a little bit slower out there. So we'll see.
He's looked washed for 3 years. That's the challenge. Yeah. It wasn't just last year, but last year was definitely a low. He was at the low point.
Yeah.
You hear the names we're talking about. We have, you know, Latavius Murray and Zeke unironically being thrown around here. So I agree.
I just cracked up whenever Chris said the words Latavius Murray and throw money at him.
All right. Speaking of Joshua Kelly's former employer, there's a transition for you. Question number six, should we actually be rallying around Gus Bus, or will the Chargers go ahead and add a superior running back? Right now, guys, we're looking at a team that now without Austin Eckler or Joshua Kelly has 87% of their RB carries from last year and 91% of the targets up for grabs. So again, Gus Edwards got brought in going from, you know, John Harbaugh to Jim Harbaugh. I think it would make sense for him to be almost their primary, at least short yardage back. And if they want to lean on him kind of more in early downs, that makes sense. But I really have a hard time seeing Isaiah Spiller, Elijah Dotson, or Jarrett Patterson, the only other running backs on the roster at the moment, being someone they're going to overly lean on. So Dwayne, you had the tweet back in, you know, January when Harbaugh took the job about how in his last 17 years as a head coach, his teams have attempted more passes than runs only twice. I studied in pretty much every article I do on the matter, because you mentioned even with Andrew Luck at Stanford, he posted 63 and 59% run rates. So we know the Chargers are going to want to establish it. We freaking see what they're doing with their wide receiver room. I mean, Dwayne, like, if it is going to be the Gus Edwards show at the goal line, he's probably undervalued, but they got to be adding someone else. Anyone in particular you'd like it to be?
Well, again, like, there's not a lot of great names here. They're going to have to draft someone, and maybe they add another player like a Zeke or one of these other guys that we've talked about. And then I think you're definitely going to have a committee, because they're going to run the ball so much. Like, even if Gus is the only man standing that we think is even a decent running back, he can't carry that whole workload. Like, he's a bigger guy, but at his age, like, you're going to have concerns about him holding up for the season. So my guess is they draft a quorum, you know, which is obviously, you know, attached to Harbaugh. He knows he can handle a big workload. He's already given him that at Michigan. So, and if it's not him, they're drafting somebody, right? To go along with Gus Edwards. But like, I moved him up from running back 61 to running back 42 in my updated top 150. Yeah. You know, I'm like you, I don't want to get overly excited about him, but I'm okay drafting him right there, because even if they add competition and he gets 40% of a backfield that might run the ball more than any other team in the league, and quarterbacks aren't going to be stealing really any of it, I could get down with Gus Edwards for that price. It's probably a tad low. I hate to say that, but if it started to move up, which it could, like, depending on what happens in the draft, like, it would be like the Zamir White thing, where we would be like, oh, okay, I had fun drafting him whenever he was really cheap. Now people are getting carried away projecting volume for him, and I'm just going to kind of bow out. The other thing with the Chargers is, like, how good is the offense going to be? Like, they've got to add a really good offensive weapon early in the draft to even make us feel better about, like Chris was talking about earlier, thinking about the whole environment for some of these offenses, what Mike Williams did for the Jets and how that could help have, like, ripple effects. Like, well, the Chargers need a playmaker, whether it's Brock Bowers, Malik Nabers, you know, whatever they do at pick five. Like, it's got to be, to me, a big time skill position player for me to get a little bit more excited about whoever the running backs are, because if they don't upgrade the wide receivers, man, like, I know Justin Herbert's a good player, but like, this could be an offense that struggles to score points this year.
The Blake Corum fit, again, another Michigan man, makes a lot of sense. It would be a bit overlapping with Gus. I mean, just with the nature of the way these guys are scoring. I mean, Gus Edwards, shout out, 13 touchdowns last season. That's 13 more than I've ever had, you know, as a professional football player. That said, the longest was 7. You know, they all pretty much came from inside. They all did come from inside the 10-yard line. And there's a lot of that with Blake Corum as well. I mean, Corum had 27 rushing touchdowns last year. All but 5 came from inside the 5-yard line. So he might not have a ton of explosiveness. In Corum's defense, obviously his 2022 season ended with a horrible knee injury. And the tape did seem to show that, you know, later in the season against Penn State, against my Buckeyes, sadly, against, you know, Bama, Washington, those games, like, you did start to see more juice. He had a longer touchdown run against Penn State for 30 yards, got clocked at 20.5 miles per hour. That's faster than anything Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley, or DeAndre Swift managed to do last season. So I don't think Corum is necessarily washed, but then again, really didn't see him get back that 2022 form. And even again, kind of doing the whole tape view, like, he got better at the end of the year. The numbers really don't reflect that at all. In fact, he was more efficient in pretty much any advanced metric you want to look at in the first 7 games relative to the last 8. A lot of that has to do with the competition. So it's a complicated, you know, thing going on here. But Chris, man, like, is it that easy that Harbaugh is just going to bring his guy back in here? Or perhaps, you know, do we throw more money at Latavius Murray in this situation?
Well, no, I don't know if it's going to be. Yeah, no. Now that's going to be, that phrase is going to be stuck in my head for like the rest of the day. I'm just going to keep using that for a while now. But I don't think it's going to be like a similar archetype of player to Gus Edwards, just based off of like the rest of the team needs as of right now. Like they, to like kind of piggybacking off what Dwayne was saying, like they need playmakers like in the passing game, but they would also kind of need a playmaker like in the running game too. If we think about like how well like Gus worked like in like for Baltimore, but they still had like a Keaton Mitchell for a time frame, like a Justin like a Justice Hill like for a time frame in order to help like create explosives and like just have that running back that's still capable of being like usable in the passing game and all of that. So I do think that if they are going to add like somebody, whether it's somebody still out there in free agency that might fit the bill, even though I don't really see anybody that kind of fits in there, like maybe Clyde Edwards-Helaire that could like fit some of that. But either way, like if it's going to be somebody, it would have to be like a running back that's just, again, stylistically different or just that complements like what Gus can do right now. Because Gus on just his like 40% of the team's carries that he had for Baltimore, he was still like the RB32, like in points per game. So like if that's all he's going to get, I'm 100% with Dwayne, like having, like being able to draft him in like the what high 40s or whatever, like I would take that like all day long, or I guess low 40s or however you want to look at it. But yeah, I would still draft him like at that value, just because if he's going to get that, and we know that at least there's the assumption that their volume is going to be there for them based off of like Greg Roman, Jim Harbaugh and all of that, then at least it gives us some credence to Gus being a value or somebody that we would want to take. And then if the other person is a Blake Corum, okay, fine. That's what we would expect, or at least that's what we would think like might happen to like, augment like what Gus can do. Or even if they wind up like signing up Clyde Edwards-Helaire, whomever else in free agency, all the more better for Gus at this point. So I do think that there's at least some value in taking him. And maybe if you want to get a little bit aggressive on him, I honestly wouldn't mind it.
If you go back to Harbaugh's 4 years with the 49ers, obviously Frank Gore was his lead back. He peeled off RB20, RB14, RB23, and RB29 finishes in PPR points per game. Big time touch totals, though. We're talking 299, 287, 292, and 266. Again, I would be surprised if it is going to be Gus Bus, you know, flirting with a touch total closer to 300 than 200. But as things stand right now, he is the favorite. And again, when the signing happened, I remember I was talking about it, Dwayne, like, yeah, if there was going to be a single other coach or team in the league to give Gus this sort of fantasy-friendly role, probably the freaking brother of the guy who was
doing it. On a positive note for Gus, though, like that wasn't the same Frank Gore. I mean, that shows you that, I mean, mm-hmm. Harbaugh is just committed to the run period. He doesn't even care if his running back's good. Yeah. Like, Frank Gore wasn't that efficient back then, and he was still willing to completely load him up. So if Gus Edwards happened to somehow be better than that version of Frank Gore, like, you know, we could be surprised by like what we get out of Gus Edwards.
Yeah.
Let's stick with the Chargers because as we know, running back, not exactly the only roster hole this offense has to be dealing with. Question number 7, what should expectations actually be for this Chargers passing game as a whole at this point? Because we've talked about the likelihood that we're going to have problems just with the volume element. And then it's like, okay, so we have Justin Herbert. I hope that we all agree that he is a very much elite quarterback. You know, we certainly have 296 million reasons to, you know, go ahead and make that assertion or whatever that number is. But at the end of the day, man, right now, this wide receiver room is literally just Quentin Johnston, Josh Palmer, Darius Davis, and something named Simi Fehoko. So, yeah, not exactly looking great, fellas. That said, the Chargers do have 5 picks inside the top 110 overall selections, and most intriguingly, the number 5 overall, number 37 overall, and number 69 overall picks. So, in my latest landing spot article, and of course, you know, as soon as I wrote this, we had a bit more news come out, but I would love for Odell Beckham Jr. to consider taking his talents back to Los Angeles. I still think he can win one-on-one and in terms of where he would be happy in terms of just getting him an elite quarterback and not being the number one. I'm not saying 2014 OBJ is coming back anytime soon, but I think as a number 2 or number 3 here, it would make a lot of sense. And let's face it, with those Harbaugh 49ers teams, Michael Crabtree was younger in those years, still very much number 1 wide receiver, but they were very comfortable, especially by 2014, flanking him with some of these, you know, aging veterans like Anquan Boldin, Brandon Lloyd, even Stevie Johnson came back for a year on the squad. So maybe OBJ does end up signing a deal with Miami, who he is visiting with today, but Los Angeles, Miami, you guys could imagine what's going on there. So Chris, again, just is the answer to this passing game just no? I mean, Justin Herbert's a guy where we've seen him be flirting with the top 5 quarterback discussion in fantasy land. Right now it's looking like we're going to be going into drafts with him outside the top 12.
Yeah, the answer is just no for me at this point. No, I could. Well, I guess I could talk myself into like a Josh Palmer, like based off his like current price. But as I would assume, like as more folks like start to look at the distribution of targets, they might talk themselves into, well, I've seen Josh Palmer, you know, hit like hit on deep passes like with Herbert beforehand. I'll just continue to draft this guy. He's going to be their wide receiver one. So let's just continue to steam him up to the point where he becomes undraftable at his cost. But no, I'm taking more of a long-term view at the Chargers passing game, looking at their GM, was it Horitz, I believe is his last name, the guy that came over from the Ravens. I do wonder if they wind up taking a similar approach to kind of what the Bears have done, where it's either that or they take the Packers approach. So the Ravens, the Bears approach being that, well, we'll just get maybe a guy in the building for 2024. Maybe they draft in Neighbors or like insert one of the wide receivers from this class here. They have to get their house in order regarding all the cap space and all that for this season. 2025, they come out like gangbusters, grab a whole bunch of other, like whatever free agents are available. Maybe they take T. Higgins like in 2025 or whatever, and then they go from there. Or with all the picks they have this year, did they take the Packers route? They just shotgun the roster with as many wide receivers as possible, and they wind up just falling ass backwards into a Bo Melton, a Dontavian Wicks, or whomever, like for this draft class. I mean, it's entirely possible that they, because they have to do something. Quentin Johnston, for as many opportunities as he was given, wasn't able to really at least meet basic expectations at this, like for what we'd hoped he would be. Now I get at that point, Justin Herbert was injured. Offense was really like at least on its downhill trend, like from there. But if it's just going to be those guys, no, I'll just look at, like we were just talking about with Gus Bus. I might invest into the passing game, or invest in the running game rather. But this passing game with these pass catchers, I'll just have to like literally pass on them for now.
Cap space was certainly a huge issue, but you know, you subtract your starting two big money wide receivers and they actually do now have the fifth most effective cap space. That said, it'd be very strange if they just got rid of Mike and Keenan only to re-sign lesser wide receivers in free agency right now. So I'm with you. I think they're going to go to the draft if anything, but Dwayne, I mean, even if they use number 5 overall pick on a tackle, or, you know, it's been one of these teams that we are expecting them to potentially trade down. Not the worst draft to, you know, use the 37th, the 69th, and maybe, you know, the 110th overall pick on the position. Maybe we are, you know, looking at a situation where we could get Justin Herbert at a bit of a discount, because at the end of the day, let's face it, everywhere Harbaugh has gone, they have been winning football teams. And I mean, it's not like Alex Smith and Kaepernick weren't able to put up some efficient numbers in his passing games as well. So even if the volume isn't going to be there, Herbert, man, that's a really talented quarterback that we're about to see fall out of the top 12. Is it buy low opportunity, you think?
I mean, I've got him at QB 15. I already had him outside the top 12, so I didn't really drop him that much on the new news because we were expecting something to happen with one of Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. We didn't know for sure if it would be both of them. So, yeah, I think Justin Herbert's still a really good quarterback. But at this point, I just can't find a reason to need to draft him inside the top 12. We know they're going to run the ball all the time. I don't like the weapon. So, like, how does he make us really regret not taking him? I don't think there's a path for that. I just don't think there's a path for that this year. Now, we'll see what they do in the draft. If they take Malik Neighbors in the first round, then they turn around and take another wide receiver we really like in round 2. And we're like, okay, one of these guys is probably going to get hit, is going to hit. If we get lucky, two of them hit. We can't completely say that Quentin Johnston is, you know, there's no way that he could come back and hit. It would be a bit of a miracle given how bad he was. But like, he's only a second year player. So at that point, you know, you would have a few outs. But even then, with how heavy Jim Harbaugh's been, you know, around the run game, I moved Caleb Williams ahead of him. I would rather take Caleb Williams right now than I would rather take Justin Herbert. I mean, Caleb Williams, we're pretty sure he's going to the Bears, right? That's all but locked in. And, you know, anything can happen. It's still the NFL. But looking at the weapons that Caleb's going to have, Caleb's going to run more than Justin Herbert. I would rather take Jaden Daniels right now over Justin Herbert. If I'm going to take a pocket passer, I'd rather take Tua. He has his weapons. I'd rather take Kyler Murray over Justin Herbert. I think like where I get to the conversation with Herbert is when you get to the names Kirk Cousins, Trevor Lawrence, Jared Goff. Like to me, he's really in that tier now, but he's the younger guy that's proven it out of those. So fine, you could take Herbert. I think you could also, if we weren't worried about Kirk Cousins, and you've done a good job of this, Ian, you know, outlining that it's not just any you know, Achilles injury. It's off his push-off foot, so it could have a little bit of a lingering effect for a quarterback that's already aging. But if we weren't worried about that, like, Kirk Cousins would also easily be ahead of Justin Herbert for me, because, like, we just know he has the weapons. And honestly, where I have to take Justin Herbert right now, underdog ADP of 102, I can get Kirk Cousins at 124? No, just give me Kirk Cousins. Like, if I got to factor in ADP. So, it's again, like, when I start looking at the names around him, I'm like, really? Like, am I really going to regret not taking Justin Herbert that much, even if I have to take Trevor Lawrence? What about Matthew Stafford? I think it's the same thing. I'm just as happy taking Matthew Stafford as Justin Herbert right now.
As someone who drafted Justin Herbert at the end of round one in my recent Dynasty Superflex startup, not loving the answers, guys, but I also can't exactly disagree with you. So we will see how that ends up.
Dynasty is a little different because, you know, eventually they will reload the deck for him. Quarterbacks play a long time. So in a Superflex format, I don't blame. I think that's still a fine pick with what you know about Justin Herbert. Redraft for this year, just a little bit of a different story.
Yeah, I just missed out on the tier of guys that are ahead of him. But, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. Last question, everyone. And as always, it's sponsored by our friends over at DraftKings. Don't forget, use that promo code QUESTIONS. $5 to get $150 in bonus bets. What a freaking deal. But yes, DraftKings question of the week. What are reasonable year one expectations for Cardinals wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr.? Yeah, okay, maybe they actually go somewhere different. But all the smoke seems to be pointing towards Maserati Marv being the number four overall pick to Arizona. So I will say there's also a lot of steam in the mock draft world for a certain Michigan man, JJ McCarthy, potentially being the pick of four if the Minnesota Vikings use that extra first rounder to try to trade up and get in that spot. So maybe we see Marv go to the Chargers. And honestly, though, if he goes to the Cardinals or the Chargers, he's the undisputed wide receiver one. I do think as a pure passer, we'll take Justin Herbert over Kyler Murray. But, you know, it's not going to be like this, oh, okay, like we're going from wide receiver 12 on the Cardinals to wide receiver 24 on the Chargers or vice versa. I don't think it's the biggest difference in the world. But, Dwayne, I mean, we see it, man. Like, just looking at it right now, he is already up there as wide receiver 10 ahead of guys like DJ Moore, Devontae Adams, Brandon Ayuk, et cetera, et cetera. So, based on the fact that we can feel better about those two landing spots and pretty much already having an elite quarterback, I don't think it's completely egregious. You know, if we had him going to the Patriots, I'd be more concerned. But thoughts on what Marv could do in this Cardinals offense in year one, because it's going to cost a pretty penny to find out.
Yeah, I mean, look, the ceiling is that he can do what Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase did in their rookie years. Like, he's that kind of profile. He's that good. The floor is, you know, you get a high-end wide receiver 3. You're paying a wide receiver 10 overall price right now. So you're paying for him as a low-end wide receiver 1. His ceiling is being a high-end wide receiver 1, even as a rookie. But his floor, I think a reasonable floor is to call him a low-end wide receiver 2, right? He might creep down into that wide receiver 3 conversation. But, I mean, I've looked at enough about him now. I'm not completely done with, like, my rankings and stuff, but I've been pulling together all the collegiate data. Super excited about what we're going to have for you guys over at Fantasy Life. But I've been doing a lot of adjustments for quarterback play, average depth of target, all this stuff. Like, dude, Marvin Harrison Jr. is an absolute beast. Like, I have no doubt. Like, and this is not news to anybody. People have already told you this. You don't even need a lot of the cool stuff I've been working on to tell you that. But I'm just saying, he checks all the boxes. I know recently there's people, I don't know, Malik Nabers, he should really be, you know, nope. I like Malik Nabers, but Marvin Harrison Jr. has been doing this for his whole career, and he's played with really good players around him. And again, even after adjusting for quarterback play, which obviously was a little bit of a struggle before Jaden Daniels came over at LSU, like, Harrison still grades out ahead. So look, I get where he's going. You got to take him ahead of names like Drake London. You got to take him ahead of Devontae Adams. You got to take him ahead of Stephon Diggs. You got to take him over DJ Moore. So it's not always easy, you know, to just click his name. But I do think he belongs in the conversation with all the names that we've just said, the more and more research that I've done. So I guess the big question I have for you guys is, like, how much upside really is left? Like, he would have to come in and really, like, he would need to have an absolute bonkers rookie season.
Yeah, like 1,400 yards somewhere.
Yes. Like, so the expectations are really high. Like, I think he's fine where he's going, and I definitely want to have exposure to him with all those other names that we just said. But, man, I don't know. It's not like I'm going to click his name every time around those other names. So I do think it's reasonable where he's going with his ceiling and what his floor is based on his profile. But it just feels weird still, guys, to click on a rookie wide receiver at wide receiver 10. But if there was a profile to do it on, it's definitely Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah.
I will say, and look, you guys know I love Marv. I've mentioned I'm from Columbus, Ohio, like 10 times a podcast. But I don't think it's completely as ridiculous as people make it out to be to prefer neighbors. I mean, we have Daniel Jeremiah and Dane Brugler telling us that they know for a fact that there are several teams out there, NFL teams, that do view neighbors as the wide receiver one. Coming out of high school, neighbors per 247 composite, you know, consensus was more slightly higher rated than Harrison. It was like, I think neighbors was 150, Marv was 160. Last year in the Blittencloff, it's a tough word for me to say. Marv won. Yeah, there we go. Harrison won like by wrong. One vote. Okay, he won by one vote. LSU fans are still furious about it. Like, the NFL draft, everyone says, yeah, Marv's number one. I think Marv's number one. But guess what? Look at every single mock. You have Marv going four. You have neighbors going like six.
So thing is, yeah. Marv's just a much safer pick. Like, I agree, yeah. Malik Neighbors may have the same ceiling as Harrison. But if you look at Harrison's profile and for how long he's done this versus Neighbors really breaking out big last year and before that, like, was fine but not great. Like, the history of the kind of profile Neighbors has just carries more risk. So to me, there's no reason to try to force it with Neighbors. Is there a chance Neighbors ends up being better than Harrison? Yes. But if I'm having to spend like the first pick on a wide receiver off the board and I'm an NFL GM, I think you're crazy to overthink it. I think it's stupid. Just because Harrison's just that much more of a lock. Ceilings, you can argue, are the same. But I would argue that, you know, we're not necessarily the best, you know, at forecasting ceiling. It's not an easy thing to do. You know, I think worrying about getting the pick right, knowing that you got something for it, I think matters just as much. So I don't know. I struggle to find any way to put Neighbors ahead of Harrison.
These Ohio State and LSU wide receivers, my goodness. So again, I have Marv as well, but I do think, you know, people are, oh, this is prospect fatigue and draft fatigue. Hey, speed kills, and Neighbors certainly has a lot of it. So, and again, we haven't even mentioned this ridiculous, oh, Marv isn't working out. NFL teams probably told him not to work out. You know, he's not out here. What's the eastbound and down? You know, I'm an athlete. I'm not trying to be best at, you know, conditioning or working out or whatever this is. Yeah. So I think Marv's fine with all that. I'm not worried about it. But Chris, thoughts on, again, Marv, just year one expectations. I know you were saying before 1,400 yards. Like, we got to get up there, man. As a top 10 redraft wide receiver, at this point in time, I don't see myself clicking draft.
Yeah, and that's the tough part, because we can get so enamored with the profile, like, because I've been looking at some of this stuff too, putting together some of the other rookie profiles that we'll be having up on the site, and we've been rolling them out over the past couple of weeks. And like, I was looking at Ricky Parasol like last week, and like, just Marvin Harrison's name just keeps popping up like every study that I'm doing. I mean, one of four like wide receivers in the class, like with above average like yards per route running against like man and zone coverage. I mean, just every stat, it's just like Marvin Harrison just like pops up. So like, and I get it. But I agree with you on the note that maybe we are getting into that point of the offseason where it is like draft fatigue, where we have like looked at these guys and we've like gone through every like YouTube highlight rabbit hole to the point where it's like, yeah, like, oh, I can talk myself into like this 1A, 1B type of thing. But still, for me, like, after, just because I am so like just more analytically inclined, like when I see all this stuff and it's just like, yeah, you should just take the guy that's better. Like, I just like his bar, the bars on his chart are so much higher than Neighbors. Like, just like, again, like my, you know,
especially for their career. Like, if you just want to look at their best season, they are really close. But when you look at them for their career, and I'm looking at both of those things, Harrison comes out ahead, even after adjusting for the quarterback play and all those other things. I think the one thing though, Ian, like I thought I would click on Marvin Harrison Jr.'s name less. But like, when I start looking at the names around him, like, I can find a way to mix them in. Like, it's hard to click on his name every time ahead of Devontae Adams and Stephon Diggs, but I'm fine mixing it in. I think there's questions for both those players.
Yes.
I think there's questions for DJ Moore with Keenan Allen arriving, you know, and you're going to have a rookie quarterback playing. So I feel like Harrison belongs in that tier, and I don't mind clicking his name over Deebo Samuel.
Yeah.
I don't mind clicking 100%. On it over Brandon Ayuk. I don't mind clicking on it over Michael Pittman. So I actually feel like, where he's sitting, I'm surprised at how willing I am to select him. You know, I don't want to do it every time, But I mean, I have no problem drafting Marvin Harrison Jr. over Debo. Like, we love Debo, but we know he's in an offense that's going to run the ball plenty. He's got all these other weapons he's got to deal with. If Marvin Harrison is the next Justin Jefferson and he does it in his rookie season, he has access to a ceiling that the only way Debo gets there is through multiple injuries, and he has to stay healthy.
Yeah, I think it almost goes back to what you were when we were talking earlier about like George Pickens and like your rank for George Pickens. It's like you see the number, you see the rank, and it's just almost like a sticker shock type of thing.
But then when you look at
the names around it, you're just like, oh, okay, well, I can see a way he can beat him. I can understand like why I would want to draft him around this person. So I think when folks would look, just you hear the price tag, wide receiver 10. I'm not paying wide receiver 10 for Marvin Harrison. I don't care like who he plays with. He could be drafted by the Chiefs. Actually, if the Chiefs drafted him, everybody would draft him at wide receiver 10. But it's like, you get what I'm saying. It's like when you see the price tag, it's like, well, I'm not going to draft a wide receiver at that. But then we start to compare them to and contextualize the other situations of the guys around him. Then it's like, he's got outs. Like Harrison has outs in order to just fall into that like wide receiver 1 like production, like by the end of the season.
And again, it's made that much easier when we're pretty confident he's going to wind up with, you know, either a Cardinal or a lightning bolt on his helmet. So, hey,
if he goes one more pick down and it's the Giants,
that makes
things a little tougher. I still think he could be a wide receiver 1, but it's a lot tougher with
Drew Lock to Marvin Harrison.
He'll be all over it. Ian's going to move it up.
Oh, kidding me? That sounds great.
1,200 yards, just lock it in. Like, that's it.
Hey, I will say Drew Lock looked pretty good with JSN. It was the other quarterback that couldn't make it work.
See, you know, I went through all of Locke's Seahawks dropbacks. I wanted to make a highlight mixtape so bad. I had like 2 or 3 plays check marked.
Just live your best life, man. Do it.
Just do it, man.
Put them on a loop and just, you know.
I gotta go back and I love the.
You could get the preseason throw to JSN as well in there.
The new funny thing is like taking, you know, Joe Mixon going to the Texans. You're like, you're showing like his rookie year highlights. So I should just like pump out some Drew Lock Missouri highlights and really get people excited again. Final point, Dwayne, I'm with you. I haven't really been taking wide receivers over him at that spot. I've been getting a lot of round 2 Devin Achane, who's been going right next to Harrison. Because if anything, while I do think it's fair to rank Harrison above those guys, when I can get someone like Achane or Jonathan Taylor, you know, maybe even a Saquon share here and there, and then next round, go ahead and then get the Debo, the Chris Olave or Stephon Diggs or someone like that, you know, that's kind of the battle you're starting to go with. So anyway, good discussion, fellas. Got through, you know, as always, I said, no way we'll go over an hour. We did. So, hey, it's a great day to be great. I'm not going to overly apologize for it. But Chris, anything else you want to get off your chest, my friend?
Nothing. Okay. Since we've already gone long, I'm just going to go do it now. Combine story. All right. Ooh. It's been a month.
Here we go.
It's been a month since it happened. So I'll just go ahead and put it out there. Bottom line up front, almost got into a fight with Steve Smith at the combine. So check this out. So it's the last night. It's Saturday night at the combine. We're hanging out at Prime 47. It's me. It's Connor Allen over at BetSports. Dalton Cates, who's over at Mojo, so we're chilling. And Prime 47 is one of the best places to go and hang out once you get there, because all the coaches are there, players are there. Drew Davenport was also there with us. That's why I don't know if everybody saw like his picture with Mike McDaniel while we were there. I pointed out Mike McDaniel coming down the steps and told Drew, and then he ran out and caught him on the way out and took that picture because I told him like Mike McDaniel came down the steps. Mike Tomlin was there. And of course, Steve Smith comes in around like 11 o'clock. He walks right by me. I'm wearing my Bengals hat. He looks at me, sees the hat. He just gives me the nod and then goes over to his table. I was just like, what's going on, Steve? How you doing, sir? But fast forward like 3 hours later, I've had a few more drinks by that time. And I tell Connor, like, I was like, I gave him my phone. I was like, hold my phone and like, take a picture of me and Steve. And I was, and so I walk over to the table and like, as I'm walking over, you know how, like, if you are inebriated, you're super focused on just like trying to get the right words out. And so I walk up to him and I'm like, yo, Mr. Smith, you know, I'm a big fan of yours. I remember watching you like play against my Bengals like so many times. I remember watching you and AJ Green go back and forth. Love what you're doing for the game. And of course, I'm also to get his attention name dropping, because like I was like, hey, you know, I used to work with, you know, your guys over at Underdog. I know Josh Norris. I know Hayden. And he's like, oh, OK, cool. You know, and as I'm talking to him, I see his attention turn And I, like, but of course, because I'm A, drunk, and B, trying to like make sure I'm talking with him, I'm like, I don't even notice. So like midway as I'm talking to him, he's like, "What are you doing, bro?" And I was like, "What is going on?" I turn over. Connor has walked all the way over from the bar to like right in front of the table Steve is like Steve is sitting at to take his picture, like holding my phone and taking his picture. He's like, "What are you doing, bro?" And like Connor's like, eyes are as big as dinner plates. Like, I was gonna take.
I would have just started crying.
Like, I was. I just wanted to take your picture. Is that okay? He's like, "No, it's not." And so then Connor just like turns around and he rolls out and just tries to blend into the crowd. Steve Smith gets up and he's like trying to track him through the crowd and find Connor. Oh my God. And like, I just dip like after that. I roll.
So I'm really, you were nowhere near getting in a fight with.
Yeah,
like, Steve I was Smith. Like, it was Connor.
I almost like, got Connor killed.
Well, yeah, I was like, I'm out of here because I didn't want to know it's my phone, and like I've still got the picture on my phone of me just.
Like, Chris is like, there. I don't need that phone.
Like I was like, you know what? Like because he asked me. Well, that was the other part. He turned and asked me. He's like, "Do you know these guys?" I was like, "No, I don't know them. I don't know them." He's like, so I left.
I've never seen that guy in my life.
Connor disappeared into the crowd as Steve Smith like goes like through there trying to find him. And then like we're just like, dude, what just happened, man? Like, I can't believe that. I was like, dude, like we're just gonna be over there, let Steve like go and do his thing. Like he got up and left, I think shortly thereafter. And it's like, yeah, that was wild, man. Every year something
like a bully moment when you're back in school. Like it's like you know, your adrenaline's like pumping. Mainly because you're just ready to run, which there's nothing you can do. He's going to kick your ass or he's going to catch you.
Yeah. Like you have no, because like, if that had been, if Steve Smith would have come after me, I would have beaten Xavier Worthy's 40 time. Like I would have run faster than 4-2-1. That would have been, you just see me high stepping like down the streets of Indy. Like
I'm pretty sure it would have been the lion chasing down the gazelle and we just Chris crumbling on the street.
Yeah.
Ice up, son. I can only imagine just Connor's heart drop when he realized that Steve Smith was
the look on his face was just
unbelievable. Dwayne, you want to top that?
No, I got nothing to top that. It makes me think of that video that went viral the other day of somebody, you know, saying that telling Kevin Durant he sucks. I think it was at the Mavericks game. Oh, and he comes over to them and like the stuff they start saying, like they're so nervous. They have no clue what they're even saying anymore. And they're like, "Hey, what's up, bro? What's up, bro?" And he's just like looking at them. Yeah, that would have probably been me. Mm-hmm. So good job, Chris. You probably handled it. You were probably much cooler about it than like either Ian or myself would have been.
Yeah, just walk away and hide. Walk away and hide.
Unbelievable. Well, Chris, I'm happy you and Connor are back in one piece, and I'm happy that again we got to alive. That's the biggest thing here. Two pieces. Yeah, at least you're still alive. Feasible. Yeah. All right, guys. Let's go ahead and wrap this one up. I want to thank you guys again for tuning into another edition of the Fantasy Life Podcast. For Dwayne, for Chris, for producer James, I'm Ian. Thanks again for tuning in. Until next time, take care, everybody.